At this time, we hear Columbia's news analyst, H.V. Kaltenborn, and his interpretation of today's news events abroad and at home. Here is Mr. Kaltenborn.
Good evening, everybody. The President of the United States today issued a Thanksgiving proclamation in which he said that the thought lives within us of the coming of a day when peace and productive activities of peace shall reign on every continent. Thus speaks the President, but thus does not speak the news of the day. Britain's ship losses in the war mounted to 50 today, and for the first time, the German submarines scored a really outstanding success against the British merchant marine. They did that in sinking 5 out of 27 merchantmen that were under British escort. That is, apparently the escort had left them just before 3 German submarines caught up with them and sank 5 out of the 27. Well, that indicates, for one thing, that the British escort vessels will have to follow a little farther out to sea if they expect to keep their ships safe against the new German submarines, which are very large, which have a long cruising radius, which can penetrate to all parts of the Atlantic. And that means increased difficulty for Britain. It means increased use for all her torpedo craft, for all her escorting vessels, because this lesson is going to count. She can't take chances with having that happen many times. Secretary Hull has intervened with Britain and Germany on behalf of the safety of the crew of the City of Flint. Britain and Germany were both asked to avoid any action imperiling Captain Joseph A. Gaynard and his American crew of 41. No response has so far been received from either government. Of course, what Secretary Hull fears is that the vessel may come in contact with a mine. Many of these are now floating in various waters through which the City of Flint expects to travel. The ship might be shelled by a blockading British warship if the Nazi crew refuses to stop, or it might even be blown up by the German prize crew in order to avoid surrender to the British. A Berlin dispatch says that the American chargé told the German government that the United States is holding it responsible for the safety of the captain and the crew. Well, of course, it all depends on what happens as to whether or not the German government can in any sense be held responsible, because our own government admits that the Germans had a right to seize the City of Flint. Let's not forget that. Under prize law, they had a right to take the ship for examination as to what her cargo contained. Now, what other events may develop will have to be judged as they developed. An Italian shake-up. Mussolini likes dramatic moves. Also likes to be surrounded by young men. Likes to think of himself still as a young man. Refused to permit Italy to celebrate his last birthday because he fears that he's getting old. And so, 7 cabinet ministers today resigned or were shifted. The command of the Italian army was changed. A new secretary of the fascist party was created. Marshal Rodolfo Graziani, the hero of the Ethiopian War, he was installed as chief of staff of the army in place of General Pariani. And Achille Starace, long secretary general of the fascist party, resigned and became instead head of the fascist militia. There's been a thorough shuffling in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Well, we must remember that Italian policy has changed, with Stalin taking Mussolini's place as Hitler's partner. Mussolini may have wished to get rid of certain pro-German elements. And perhaps he made this general shake-up so that this should not be too obvious. It is certain that some pro-Nazi elements in the Italian government were eliminated today. France and Britain are obviously pleased by what has happened, but Italy emphasizes that she is only following a national policy, that she is only solidifying her neutrality. And incidentally, Mussolini himself has relinquished one of the many, many posts which he holds in the Italian government. The first administration victory in the House on the neutrality bill comes today. The House votes in favor of a rule sending the Senate-approved arms embargo measure to conference. And it makes that vote 237 to 177, a margin of 60, which is exactly twice the margin that I was told in Washington by administration leaders a few days ago that they expected in the House. Now, why this sudden doubling of the vote when there have been pretty careful estimates? Well, the reason is that this is not the final vote. This is a vote on a rule to send the measure to conference, and it's quite possible that the vote will not be as heavily in favor of the Senate measure when the final vote comes after 2 days of debate. But it is indicated quite definitely by this vote that the House will pass the Senate measure with a safe margin. There are going to be 2 days of debate, and that will avoid the charge of railroading the measure through, which has already been made. But the dominant news today lies in an address that was made in Soviet Russia, made by the Premier of Soviet Russia. And that country made the important declaration that it is neutral and will remain neutral. The Russo-German Non-Aggression Pact said, Comrade Molotov, bound us to maintain our neutrality in the event that Germany participated in war. We have consistently pursued this course. He made the point that he wants, that Russia wants, a strong Germany. Improvement of Russo-German relations, he said, has proceeded along the line of strengthening friendly relations and extending our practical cooperation in rendering Germany political support in her efforts for peace. Read that word practical into the word economic, and you have what Molotov means. We have always held, he said, that a strong Germany was an indispensable condition for durable peace in Europe. There you get the old balance of power doctrine expounded this time by Molotov. A strong Germany needed to offset a strong Britain and a strong France. If the balance is established, Soviet Russia holds the balance of power. That's what Soviet Russia wants. Now she's supporting Germany in order that neither side should be able to run away with the dominating power in Europe, but that thereby should increase the final power of Soviet Russia, and if they fight one another to a standstill, that Russia can come in on the ruins and establish communism. That's what that means when Molotov says that a strong Germany is an indispensable condition for durable peace in Europe. He means the kind of communist peace that Russia would like to see established, not only in Europe, but all over the world. The imperialist character of the war is obvious, Molotov says, voicing his country's support of Germany against the injustices, as he called them, of Versailles. The war is being waged by Britain and France for world supremacy, he declared. It promises nothing for the working class but bloody sacrifice and hardships. And there he speaks true. But it doesn't promise anything for the governing class, nor for the owning class, nor for the bourgeois class, nor for an aristocratic class, whatever there may be one. For war does not help any class. But of course, when you are Molotov speaking in Soviet Russia, you are class conscious. Germany, he says, wants peace, and in a vigorous paragraph joins Adolf Hitler's peace offensive. Here's the way he puts it. Today, Germany is in the position of a state which is striving for earliest termination of the war and striving for peace, while Britain and France, which but yesterday were disclaiming against aggression, are in favor of continuing the war and are opposed to the conclusion of a peace. He indicates that the roles are changing, that the powers of peace, France and Britain, are now the powers of aggression, and that the power of Germany, accused of aggression, is now the power of peace. Ah, yes, but of course peace on Germany's terms. And no doubt any country is always willing to have peace and to preserve peace and to maintain peace if it can only do it on its own terms. And Mr. Molotov took a fling at the President of the United States. He reproached our President for interfering in the Soviet-Finnish negotiations. Even the President of the United States, he said, decided it was possible to interfere in the Finland question, a fact which is in violation of the American policy of neutrality. Not so, Mr. Molotov. The American people are sympathetic with the Finnish people, and there was no governmental interference. The President of the United States appealed to the President of Soviet Russia and expressed the hope that nothing would happen that should derogate Finnish independence. And Mr. Molotov himself goes on and indicates that Soviet Russia doesn't want to derogate from Finnish independence. So what was there then in Mr. Roosevelt's appeal which violated the American policy of neutrality? I can see that Mr. Molotov has his eye on the Congress of the United States and hopes that his declaration may be taken up by certain members of that Congress and that there will be some oratory in America which will reflect the point of view which he today expresses in Moscow. He says, "The Philippines have not got their independence yet, while we recognized Finnish sovereignty in 1917. Our proposals do not contravene Finnish independence." Perhaps not, from your point of view. But certainly, Finland thinks so. Finland has definitely indicated that by everything that she has done and all that we have been permitted to know about Russia's demands. And as for the Philippines, their independence has been conceded by the United States and no strings have been tied to it. But the little Filipinos seem to be a little less anxious for that independence now that they know the true state of the world in which they live. Lifting the United States embargo would only prolong a complicated war. Munitions manufacturers will make profits, but that isn't enough. Well, there again, many people think it may shorten the war. In any case, all we're doing is to go back to international law. Soviet Russia is also exporting arms to Germany and thereby prolonging the war. And yet, we don't criticize her for that because we know that's her right under international law. Still, we could have the right to say that Mr. Molotov shouldn't reproach us for doing what his own country seems to consider within its own right to do. Then he came to the Finland negotiations, and for the first time, we have definite knowledge as to what is involved. "We wanted an agreement," says Mr. Molotov, "along the lines of those with the Baltic nations." Ah, yes. Now we understand. That means Soviet soldiers on Finnish soil. That means Soviet naval bases in Finnish ports. That means the practical domination of a small country by its mighty neighbor. And so, we can understand why Finland is continuing to arm and why Finland has refused to concede to Russia what she has asked. With reference to Turkey, he expresses Soviet disappointment over the inability to conclude a pact with Turkey and says, "We wanted a pact of mutual assistance with Turkey, limited only to the Black Sea, so that in the event of war, enemy ships would not enter the Black Sea." Turkey did not want the pact, but signed instead treaties with the British and the French. Well, that was Turkey's right. And after all, Turkey did exempt Russia as a country against which she was not committed to go to war. And there is no compliment to Turkey on that score in Molotov's statement. And then he adds that the Russians lost 2,600 men in occupying Poland, and until now they've told us how warmly they were welcomed in Polish territories. Three men, Litvinov, Stalin, Dmitrov, heard Molotov today. Stalin, the man who sneered at communism and substituted new Russian imperialism. Dmitrov, an ardent communist on trial for his life a few years ago before a Nazi court on the charge that he had set fire to the Reichstag. And Litvinov, the advocate of collective security, Russia's league membership, cooperation with France and Britain against German aggression. Thus, do politics change in Europe overnight? We are fortunate that we live in another part of the world. Good night.
That was Columbia's news analyst, H.V. Kaltenborn, in his analysis of some of the highlights of today's news. Mr. Kaltenborn spoke from the studios of WFBL in Syracuse, New York. He will be heard again tomorrow at this same time. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.